Chapter 11. Aspen. Aspen looked around what was left of his home and sighed. Somehow, when the magic of the city seed had swept through his farm, it had also decided to make its new lady's home into a castle. A mostly below-ground castle, yes, but still a castle. Unfortunately, Aspen's house was sitting on top of Sarave's home, so in its infinite wisdom, the seed had decided to put his house on top of a tower. The only tower. Now, in order to reach his small but familiar dwelling, he had to walk up 53 winding stairs, and that was only if he started from ground level. The castle itself, though it was buried in the earth beneath him, was 3 stories high, so if he wanted to get to the bottom level, it was 60 steps down, because of course the stairs were goblin-sized and thus smaller and more plentiful than the ones he was used to. Thankfully, the ceilings were quite high for goblins, at around 7 feet, so he was able to walk without crouching, though he did occasionally bump his head on a door lintel as he passed through. He rubbed his forehead as he walked down the broad hallway, and tugged his hat gingerly down over the goose egg forming there, in spite of the minor healing he'd used on it. At the end of the hall, a polished stone door stood, and he used the caterpillar-shaped knocker hanging there to rap on it politely. He wondered vaguely if the simple but elegant decor was ancient goblin aesthetic, or Sarave's personal preference. He suspected the latter, but hadn't asked. The door swung smoothly open with an ease that would have impressed even William, who was a master stone shaper, and Nekthad stood there, looking menacing in a sharply tailored black uniform covered in black leather belts loaded down with many, many sharp silver blades. His face showed no expression, though it was possible that his cheek twitched once beneath the black satin eye patch that covered his missing eye. Juniper peered out from behind her uncle, cheeks puffed out, wearing a frilly blue dress. She stamped her little foot as she looked up at Aspen. "I don't want to be a princess. All my clothes are stupid and itchy now. I want to go home." Sarave's voice, coming from deeper within the room, sounded like she had heard this complaint more than once already. "Junie, come back so I can do your hair, please. This is your home now, and you need to be ready to greet people in a little while." The refugees, of course, had some questions and concerns for the ruler of the new city in which they found themselves. Aspen and Restor had managed to allay the worst of their fears, but they were soon to gather in the town square so that Sarave could speak to them. Most of them had seen her briefly the day before, and knew Juniper was her half-human daughter, and so they were willing to give her the benefit of the doubt, in spite of the fact that goblins were one of the dark races who had once been controlled by Lich Lord Akuji. After all, they had all left Bright in order to protect their own half-breed family and friends, and who would understand that better than a woman who had a half-blood child? Aspen stepped into the room, which was the sitting room of the royal family's private quarters. A velvet couch now sat on Sarave's handmade mats and spongy rugs. The walls were hung with a strange but oddly harmonious combination of silk curtains and colorful rush draperies. Sarave and Juniper were as unusual a mix as the interior design. The castle had come complete with furnishings, a library full of the books that Aspen had stored in crates in the root cellar that became Sarave's home, and wardrobes full of rich garments that perfectly fit the new royal family. Juniper had been excited to play dress-up at first, but once she realized how uncomfortable the clothes were compared to her loose, threadbare tunics, she'd begun to fight. Sarave had finally gotten the child into the gown she was now wearing, but Juniper flatly refused to wear anything on her feet except her soft-soled leather slippers. Aspen smiled down at the little girl, whose hair was as rebellious as she was. Wisps of medium brown hair curled up like soft little horns at her temples, and a smudge of what looked like dust streaked her cheek. Where the child had found dust in a brand new castle, Aspen had no idea, but its presence was indisputable. Juniper looked back up at him and raised her plump little arms. "Up," she commanded, and as he scooped her into his embrace, Aspen wryly thought that at least she wouldn't have trouble settling into a position of power. Sarave herself looked nervous, her skin nearly as faded and gray as it had been when he first met her, and she'd been almost dead from the poison inflicted on her by the Supreme Council of Goblins. Their fury made more sense now. Their powerless queen had produced an heir who could never be allowed to rule, even as a figurehead, after all. Sarave clearly couldn't decide whether to smile or frown at her daughter, so she did a bit of both. "Juniper," she said firmly, "hair. Now." Aspen carried the child, who had clearly hoped to find an ally, and instead discovered yet another adversary, back to her mother. Juniper pouted unrepentantly as Sarave applied sweet-smelling unguents to her hair, finally mastering the little girl's locks through sheer perseverance. Finally, the dust was removed with a swipe of an embroidered handkerchief and every mother's cleanser of last resort. Juniper made a face. Gross? Sarave pushed the handkerchief into her sleeve. Then don't get so dirty, she said, clearly exasperated. Aspen chuckled, hearing the echoes of 100 conversations with his own little bird, and patted Juniper's head, careful not to muss it. Once the gathering is over, you can, he paused, catching a look from Sarave, ask your mother if you can change back into your other clothes. Sarave nodded in approbation, and Juniper looked slightly mollified. Fine, Juniper muttered, but I want an extra muffin with dinner. Seeing that Sarave looked inclined to agree, she hastily added, and no asparagus. Sarave's narrow lips thinned further, but she nodded. You have to be silent during the meeting then, unless I say you may speak. Juniper grinned, revealing her gap-toothed smile. She had her human father's teeth, though her canines were a little too sharp, and the expression was adorable. Okay. Solemnly, Aspen offered his arm to Sarave, who was wearing a gown of a deeper blue shade than her daughter's. Her hair was in its usual heavy braid, but a few narrow ribbons and gems wound through the thick black tresses, and a slender silver crown sat on her head. Smiling, the goblin reached up and set her hand on Aspen's sleeve, and the three left the room, with Nekthat trailing silently behind. When they reached the square, the new citizens of the City of Refuge were already gathered there, and Aspen smiled as he saw that Rouge had returned. The girl was eating one of her favorite cinnamon rolls and waved, though her smile lacked its usual carefree shine. Millie, who had immediately taken over the inn's large, well-appointed kitchen, was handing out other pastries to everyone, and each visibly relaxed as they took a bite. Millie's gaze met Aspen's, and one twinkling blue eye closed in a wink that was gone so quickly he wondered if he had imagined it. A small fountain adorned the round bluestone plaza, and Aspen gently helped Sarave step up onto the edge of it. This lifted her to human eye level or slightly above, and as he watched, everyone realized she was there. 100 voices rose in question and drowned her out when she tried to speak, until a single booming voice proclaimed, "Silence!" Startled, Aspen looked around, quickly picking Jiminy out of the crowd. The boy had his hands cupped around his mouth, and Plum's hand rested on his shoulder. He grinned cheekily at Aspen when their eyes met, and Aspen smiled in thanks. Sarave raised her hands and her voice, pulling into herself so she suddenly seemed like a different person. Her posture was always good, but now it was perfect, and her face was set in the calm mask that people in power always seem to develop. Thank you for coming, everyone. She didn't shout, but somehow her voice was richer and stronger than usual. Aspen glanced at Jiminy, but the boy looked as focused on Sarave as everyone else. No, this was Sarave alone, and Aspen wondered if it was a talent, or some skill she had acquired during her early training to become a queen. I know you have many questions, the goblin went on, and I hope to answer them all, but please let me speak first. Heads nodded, more of them than Aspen had dared hope for, and silence settled over the square. You came here, Sarave said, in search of freedom. Freedom to love who you wish, to live with those you love, to fulfill your dreams in your own way. So did I. When I arrived, I was pregnant. A small murmur of surprise rippled through the group since pregnancy was still rare. Most children simply spawned into existence at some point after their parents were wed. I was sentenced to death for daring to love and marry a human man. The elders couldn't strip me of my position, for among our people, a woman is queen from death to death. The death of her mother gives her her new role, and only her own death can remove it. Sarave reached down and held out her hand for Juniper. The little girl took it and scrambled up beside her mother, looking nervous but excited at being the center of everyone's attention. Aspen and the great goddess Genos saved me and my daughter, and then saved us again when a vampire nearly took our lives. Another ripple, this time shocked and dismayed. He and Mott slew that vampire, and then Aspen gave me the greatest gift of my life. Freedom. True freedom, for the first time in my life. She paused, looking out over the crowd. Last night, I gave up that freedom. For you, and for my daughter. Today I vow to be your queen. I will do everything in my power to keep this city safe, and allow its citizens to flourish. Aspen and I will select a council, and I and that council will create new laws. With these laws, I hope to give every one of you the ability to achieve any dream for which you are willing to work, so long as your own happiness does not deny happiness to others. Her yellow eyes drifted over the crowd. Aspen knew they had to be burning in the bright sunlight, but her gaze remained open and clear. She paused on each child of visibly mixed blood and smiled. "Together, let us create the kind of home we hope for our children to have. The only thing I ask of you is that you hold your hearts open to all others who are not of your kind, not only those you know." For the first time since she began speaking, Sarave looked a little nervous. "As you are all aware, King Chester and his evil cult will not allow us peace, and unfortunately, the leadership of the goblins will likely also attack. They proved themselves traitors to their people when they attempted to kill the rightful queen and her heir, and they will not be pleased to have that known. Unfortunately for them, my people are independent to a fault." Aspen barely suppressed a snort. The goblins were independent like a wildfire was independent. So long as they had food and air, they swept across the land, leaving nothing but ashes and destruction behind. Sarave cast her gaze toward the mountains. "Our enemies are coming, and the only way we can survive is by standing together. I spoke to a few of you yesterday." Aspen looked at her, startled. When had she managed that? "I know that you have family and friends you left behind. Restor claims he has a way to get back through the mountains, though he'll have to leave his wagons behind and buy new ones once he returns to Bright." Aspen felt another surge of surprised pride flow through him. How had she managed to speak to so many people? How had she gotten Restor to tell her something that he hadn't mentioned even to Aspen? "Write to them. If you can't write, send them tokens along with a note written by someone who can. Let them know what's happening here. Don't allow Chester and his puppets to control everything the people of Quarternell know of us. Let them know that they are welcome to come here if they wish to escape from the clutches of the madman who rules them now." Expression grim, Sarave gestured to the south. "We have a month at the most to be ready to defend our dreams with our lives. If you wish to run, you should do so now, but," she waved her hand north, "we all know there is nowhere to go. The elves hide in their pretty cities, and the dwarves in their burrows. If you try again to start anew, you will lose all the benefits of a free city, from bluestones and walls, to people and leaders and a dream you can believe in. I hope you will stay. Stay, and we will all learn how to be free together." Silence fell over the crowd. Aspen looked around and saw tears on more than one face. Though many people still looked hesitant, they no longer seemed disappointed or angry. Aspen's eye caught on one particular face, however, and the scowl there caused him to turn and catch Florence and Horace's eyes. His gaze flicked from retired Captain Kyle to Sarave, and he saw that Nekthat had his hand on the hilt of one of his knives and also watched the man. Aspen tilted his head toward the goblin, and his vassals moved smoothly through the crowd to flank Nekthat, providing more of a buffer between the crowd and the royal family. Satisfied, Aspen stepped back, just enough to show that he wasn't taking a leadership role, but not so much that it looked like he was distancing himself from Sarave. Rouge edged around the outside of the crowd, coming up beside him. She was stuffing the last bite of a cinnamon roll in her mouth. Codswallop, trailing along behind her, gave a sad little chirrup as the final scraps vanished. "That was awesome. I mean, I seriously don't even know what happened, but Sarave managed to succeed at so many persuade and diplomacy skill checks that I almost don't care right now." Rouge grinned, licking her fingers, though Aspen thought he detected a bit of tension in the way she held her shoulders and how she flicked her eyes around as if half expecting a sudden attack. Aspen nodded. He had always wondered what class Sarave was. Most of the goblins he'd met were thieves, fighters, or berserkers, though he'd met a few dark priests as well. Once the war was over, the less battle-oriented goblins had begun to appear, and miners, foragers, and even merchants could be found with fair regularity. Aspen assumed there were crafters of various kinds as well, though none of these seemed to venture beyond the edges of the insular areas where the goblins lived. After today, however, Aspen knew. Sarave was a queen, through and through. She had probably been trained in all of the required skills from the moment she had spawned, though doubtless no one had ever expected she would need to use them. As royalty, she would also get a boost to experience, similar to the one Aspen had received from Gina. This would allow her to gain stats, skills, and spells more easily than others. His gaze lingered on the small woman's face, watching as she gently soothed the fears of one after another of her new citizens. It was as if she spread a blanket of calm over the crowd, and for all he knew, that was exactly what she had done. Riley, he wondered exactly when he had begun to think of the Goblin Woman as more than just a friend. When had his emotions, frozen in place at the moment of Lark's death, begun to thaw and allow so many changes? He remembered when he'd seen Calliope that day in Bright's bustling market. Always before, when he saw her at parties or events, a stab of pain had gone through him, but that day, a single face had stood between him and that familiar ache. An angular, inhuman face filled with gentle understanding and fierce intelligence. Rouge nudged him with her elbow. "Hey Aspen, that was a hint. Tell me what happened." A deep, amused chuckle sounded from behind them, and Mott added his voice to the silent conversation. "I'd like to know that as well." Though, the big man stepped up beside his daughter and looked down at her with a raised eyebrow. "First I'd like to know what you're doing here, young lady. You're supposed to be reading Wuthering Heights." Rouge crossed her arms and glared at her father. Aspen's eyebrows shot up as he sensed genuine anger and concern beneath the usual teasing. "Me? I thought you were supposed to be at the clinic." Aspen turned to Mott, quickly looking the other man over before realizing that Rouge was implying that the warrior had been injured in his other world, his real world. He felt a surge of worry and forced it down, though it was all he could do to keep from touching his friend's arm and demanding to know if he was all right. "Friend," he reminded that small voice inside himself. "Just a friend." Mott looked a little abashed. "Brent had to take care of a case of suspected mono. He's going to send me a PM when he's done. I'm just taking a little break before my first appointment, and Lyric messaged me about this." He looked around at the stately buildings surrounding them, then back at Rouge. "Would have been nice to hear about it from my daughter." Rouge looked rebellious. "You didn't want to talk to me." Mott sighed. "I told you what happened." Aspen broke into what seemed like an argument the two had already gone over at least once. "What did happen?" Mott hesitated, then looked at Rouge. "Homework before games." The girl huffed. "Heathcliff is an emo jerk, and Kathy is a snobby, selfish brat." Mott raised a brow. "Home. Work." Rouge growled, and then her eyes went blank. Her zombie immediately turned and headed toward the castle tower, presumably to return to the small bed in Aspen's house that had been set as its, her, resting place. Mott sighed, though he looked more sad than exasperated. "Why do they make it so hard to protect them?" he muttered aloud. Aspen shook his head, feeling his heart clench in his chest. "Sometimes in protecting them from one thing, we leave them open to injury from something worse." Mott seemed to realize what he'd said, then started to raise a hand to touch Aspen's arm in apology before flinching and dropping the arm again. He grimaced and gingerly touched his left forearm as he spoke. "I'm sorry, Aspen. I didn't mean—" Aspen cut him off, lifting the arm so he could look at it. Even to his life sense, it appeared fine, but it was clearly bothering the other man. "Don't worry about it. What happened?" Shrugging, Mott said, "I went to help a friend and got distracted. I made a stupid mistake and hurt my arm. I have a buddy in the clinic at work, and he's going to look at it, patch me up and get me some antibiotics. It'll be fine in a week or two." Aspen blinked. "So long. Can't you afford a healer?" Mott chuckled, and the deep vibration sent a little thrill through Aspen. "Friend," he thought to his rebellious innards with more emphasis. "We don't have healers like you do here. We have physicians and medicine. It's more like what Manuela does, though without her ability to tell exactly what the problem is. Sometimes our doctors are really just guessing from what little information they have." He held up the apparently uninjured limb. "Though there won't be any confusion about this." Aspen shook his head. "Sometimes I think your world must truly be a place of miracles, and other times it seems akin to the worst of our slums." He felt the headache begin to build again as he thought about it, and flickers of metallic contrivances hurtling down unnaturally black roads vied with images of a girl with reddish blonde braids. His vision blurred, and he blinked away the intrusive images. Mott shook his head. "Both of those things are true, and neither. Your world is a sort of idealized, simplified version of ours. We wish we lived here, with all of your magic and freedom, while we're also unwilling to give up the conveniences of our own world and face the real brutality of yours." Aspen sighed and stepped away from the armored figure of his friend. "Brutality we have in plenty. Freedom? Not so much as you travelers enjoy. I can see why you would rather be a visitor than a resident. It's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Mott chuckled dryly. That's about right. Both men turned back to contemplate the scene in front of them. Aspen's gaze was instantly drawn back to Sarave, like metal filings to a lodestone. The small woman was still answering questions, though her eyes were beginning to blink against the increasing light. Juniper, who had sat down beside her mother on the edge of the fountain, was swinging her plump little legs in boredom, and had somehow managed to tear a small hole in her pretty dress. Nekthat no longer looked quite so inclined to reach for a blade, but neither did he look happy with the situation. Aspen hesitated. It wasn't his place to interfere in this. In order for the fragile sense of authority Sarave was winding about herself to remain intact, Aspen had to keep his distance. Fortunately, someone else seemed to have realized that, because Plum and Manuela were making their way up to the front of the crowd. Plum bobbed a curtsy to Sarave, while Manuela offered her a bow, and Sarave smiled in acknowledgement, lips closed. Plum murmured a few words to Sarave, and the goblin looked relieved and held up a hand. Miss Millie would like to invite everyone to the inn for a proper meal. Miss Plum says that the dining room has been prepared. I'll move there, where I hope we can continue to speak in a more relaxed setting. Putting action to words, she regally stretched out a hand to her brother and stepped off the edge of the fountain, somehow managing to look perfectly graceful as she landed in a poof of skirts and velvet slippers. The crowd flowed away, leaving Aspen and Mott standing alone in the courtyard. The two men exchanged speaking glances, and Mott shook his head. How did that happen? Aspen smiled. It seems that Sarave is the goblin queen in exile. Honestly, she's the only one qualified for this position. Mott shot Aspen a sharp glance. Not you. Aspen sighed and began to walk toward the inn. There were two problems with that. First, if a member of Quarternell's nobility used the seed, the city thus formed would become part of Quarternell, subject to its laws and ruler. Secondly, he quirked a smile, I didn't want to. Mott reached out and caught Aspen's arm. You know you've declared war on them, right? They're probably on their way here right now. Aspen stopped and tugged his hat down over his eyes. Akuji is smarter than that. The city seed was the wild card in the deck, and now it's anyone's game. Akuji has never been one to settle for even odds. He'll send scouts, then smaller parties to harry us and find our weaknesses. Of which we have many, Mott said, looking around as two unicorns and a glorified guinea pig raced through the square, followed by a small mob of laughing children, who were followed in turn by a very large goat, who stamped his hooves threateningly but somehow managed to stay just behind the slowest of the children. Aspen nodded. We can't let them get here. There is literally nothing we can do to prevent them from crushing us through sheer numbers. So what's the plan? Mott's voice was steady, as were his eyes, betraying not a single doubt. Aspen held up a pale blue gem, raising it so the brilliant spring sunshine streamed through it, fracturing into a million rainbow-hued glimmers. Opening his hand, he let it fall down into his palm, then squeezed. There was no way mortal strength should have been able to destroy the solid stone, but somehow it crumbled beneath his touch, trickling from between his fingers as glittering dust. I'm going to ask a friend for a little favor.